I'll recite it. Some of you may know it. If you know it, you can recite it with me. I'm going to translate it so that you know the meaning of it. And then we'll begin the class. So this mantra goes, Om Brahmanandam Paramasukadam Kevalam Jnanamurtim Dundvatitam Gaganasadrisham Tatvamasya Dilakshyam Eyakam Nityam Vimalachalam Sarvati Sakshi Bhutam Bhavatitam Trimanaritam Satguru Tam Namami Om Shanti 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 Om Brahmanandam Om that absolute Anandam bliss Paramasukadam the giver of supreme happiness. Om Brahmanandam Paramasukadam Kevalam Jnanamurtim. It is alone. It is in the form of knowledge, Jnanamurtim. Dundvatitam. It is beyond all opposites. Gaganasadrisham. It is like space. Om Brahmanandam Paramasukadam Kevalam Jnanamurtim Dundvatitam Gaganasadrisham Tatvamasi Dalakshyam. It is the essence of the sentence, you are that. Tatvamasi Adilakshyam Eyakam, it is one. Eyakam Nityam, it is eternal. Vimala, it has no defects. Achalam, it never changes. Vimalachalam Sarvadi Sakshi Bhutam. It is the witness of the intellect of all beings. Sarvadi Sakshi Bhutam Bhavatitam. It is beyond all feelings and existences. Bhavatitam Trigunarahitam. It has no gunas. Trigunarahitam Satguru Tam Namami. To that guru, that's the real guru. He's not some guy who's sitting in front of you with a beard. he's that reality. The guru is that. Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Deva Maheshwara, Guru Sakshat, Parabrahma. The guru is that supreme reality that has that description. It's a very beautiful mantra. It has the whole essence. You could give probably a workshop just on that. But anyway, that's the essence of Vedanta. That's who the guru really is. He's your own self. He's the witness of your intellect. That's the guru. He's inside you as your own self. The guru never leaves you. Because Guru is Atma. That's the real meaning of who the Guru is in Vedanta. Okay. Let me just say a few more things. Yesterday I was talking about the witness. How that in each one of us there's a witnessing consciousness that's aware of all of our thoughts, all of our experiences, all of our states. And that witness in you never changes, is not in time or space. It's pure consciousness. And the nature of that witness is infinite bliss. That's your nature. You can't lose it. It's not something you have to do something to become or get. So in each one of us, that witnessing consciousness is that tat. That absolute reality, that Brahmananda, that absolute bliss. But there's something more to understand about this. The witness in me is that, and the witness in you and you and you is that. But the question is, how many witnesses are there? I have my witness. I'm witnessing my thoughts. Anybody witnessing my thoughts? No. You're witnessing your thoughts. So you got your witness. I got my witness. We all have a witness. So how many witnesses are there? How many people in the room? 20? 20 witnesses? Seems like it. Because I don't witness your dream. You don't witness my dream. So how? What is this? I thought this was ekam advityam. This witness was one without a second. In order to understand this, in that mantra that I recited, one of the descriptions was gagana sadrisham. This reality is gagana. Gagana means space. Sadrisham means like. This witness is like space. So how many spaces are there? One. Yeah? Well, space, generally speaking, we think of space as unending, infinite, indivisible space. Space is one. All the things supposedly exist in space, and space is one. And so just like space, which is unending, unchanging, indivisible, that self in you is just like space. It can't be cut, you can't burn space, you can't affect it in any way. Things move in space, but space doesn't move. So the self is, if you want to think of something in the world that is like the self, in a certain sense, it's kind of like space. And there's only one space. So how is it that there's only one witness like space? Because it seems as though I'm my witness and you're your witness and we all have different witnesses. So it seems like there's a plurality of witnesses. And here's how it's to be understood. There's one space. Suppose I take a cup, and then I take a bigger cup. So I have two cups. So in this cup, there's cup space, right? You say, oh, the space inside the cup, how big is that space? Oh, it's very little, it's a little space. And this space is, oh, that's a big space in there. So there's two spaces, little space and big space. And how about this? The little space, I'm going to move it over here. So the space is moving, and you could even say, if you look in the cup, if there's smoke in there, you go, boy, the space in there is dirty, smoky. So we have two different spaces. The spaces are able to move. They're each different from each other. Why is that? How is that? And the reason is, it's not because of space. It's because of the cups. If I were to, the space in the little cup, if I take the cup away, what happens to the space in the cup? It's just one with the big space. The big pot, also, take it away. It's in the wall of the cup, from the inside to the outside, is there space? Does the walls of the cup cut the space? It's homogeneous, it's indivisible. But we speak of it like that because of the limiting adjunct, the thing that seems to limit the space, even though it doesn't, but seems to, that's called the limiting adjunct, something that seems to contract the infinite space, something that seems to limit the infinite self, is called in Sanskrit an upadhi, a false limitation on the thing. The witness of my mind is like the space in this cup. The witness of your mind is like the space in your cup. We're all like cups, but the space, that witnessing consciousness, is the same in everyone. It's not different. The Gita says, ekatma sarva bhuteshu. There is ekatma, one self, in all beings. The self in me, and the self in you, and the self in everyone. Not only all beings, not only all human beings, but everything, every being, is pervaded by that non-dual reality. The cups and the mountains and the rivers and the sun and every single thing, every single person, every single being is pervaded by that consciousness. It's the essence of us all, and it's only one. But it seems to be many because of the limiting adjuncts. I am that self associated with this body, mind, senses, and ego. That's my cup. So I'm different from you because you have your own body, mind, senses, and ego. And we all have different stories about this body, mind, senses, and ego. But that witnessing consciousness, if you examine your own experience, you'll see that not only is it one and unchanging, but it pervades the whole universe. Yesterday when I was talking about our experience of dream, when the dream is appearing to us, that whole universe of the dream, my consciousness is pervading the whole dream. It's the warp and woof of the whole dream. If my consciousness goes, what happens to the dream? Could it last for 1 second? My consciousness has to be there to give the dream reality. It's the truth of the dream. It permeates the dream. It's entered into the dream as the very warp and woof of it. By the way, to enter in Sanskrit, the root is called vish. That which enters is vish. Has anyone ever heard of Vishnu? Vishnu is that all-pervading consciousness, your consciousness. You are Vishnu because you are that thing that pervades everything. That is Vishnu. That's the meaning of Vishnu. He's not some guy with eight arms. Vishnu is that all-pervading consciousness. That's your true nature. You are Vishnu. Like space. One. Indivisible. There's only one witness. My witness and your witness are not different. My mind is different than your mind. My life is different than your life. But the witnessing consciousness in me is not different than in you. That's exactly the same. One witnessing self in all beings. The Gita says, he who sees himself in all beings and all beings in himself, he is wise amongst men. He who sees himself in all beings, when he looks at anybody, he sees himself. He who sees, take a look at the dream. All those beings, they exist in me. He who sees himself in all those beings, he pervades every one of them. He's in them as their very warp and woof. The essence of all of them is that consciousness that pervades the whole dream, that gives the dream existence, that gives the dream being, that allows the dream to even appear. He is in all beings. And all those beings exist in me. They appear in me. They have no existence apart from me. The hard part is to see the waking state like that. that this whole waking state, all of you, it's myself, to see myself in all of you, and to see all of you appearing in myself, in that Chaitanya consciousness. All things appear, they abide, and they disappear. That from which all these have come, that in which all this abides, that in which all things dissolve. What is that? That's me. Nothing can appear without me. In deep sleep, there was just me. When this duality appeared, who did it appear to? Me. Where does it abide? It abides in me. If it disappears, like in deep sleep, where will it disappear to? It disappears in me. I am the unchanging reality in which all phenomena appear, abide, and disappear. There's only one witness. We shouldn't think that myself, my witness, is different from you. That's a unique teaching of Vedanta. Ekatma sarvabhuteshu, one self in all beings. That one witness is in everybody, and it's the same, indivisible like space. So what I thought was, this is a short class, and I thought that maybe we would begin by this introduction that I gave you. Was just talking. Let's see if we can base it that it's not this guy from New York talking, but that the Bhagavad Gita is saying exactly what I'm saying. So we'll just take a look to begin with this 13th chapter. If you have it, you can read along. If you don't, it's not really that important. I'll be reading it for you. Maybe I should say a few words about the Bhagavad Gita. Yesterday I said briefly that the Bhagavad Gita is not a theological text. It's not like the Bible, the Torah, the Quran, or anything like that. It's a philosophical text. It's a text that is trying to determine what exactly is truth, what is reality, what is wisdom. Philosophy. So, in order to study Vedanta, there are three sets of literature that people study, if you really want to study Vedanta. And that consists of three different approaches to Vedanta. And one is called the Upanishads. That's the very basis of Vedanta, the Upanishads. The very word Upanishad, Upanishad, Upa, it brings us near to that witness. Ni, it makes it absolutely clear. And Shad, it destroys our ignorance about that witness. That's what an Upanishad is. Upanishad, it brings us near. As we read the Upanishad, it introverts our minds, and then it points out this witnessing consciousness that's the true self of everyone, the only reality. That's the Upanishads. I'll say another thing about the Upanishads that maybe people are not familiar with. They're the oldest philosophical texts in the world. Nothing precedes it. There is no more ancient teaching in India or anywhere else that we know of. There's literature before the Upanishads, no doubt, and cultures other than the Vedic culture. But philosophical literature, this Upanishad is before Buddhism. 500 BC was the Buddha. Before Mahavira, Jainism. 500 BC, Mahavira. The oldest Upanishads, the Brihadaranyaka and the Chandogya Upanishads, are dated by almost all scholars at 700 to 800 BC, which means 200 years before the Buddha was walking around in India, there were people who were teaching what I'm talking to you about today, not Buddhism. The most ancient teaching is Vedanta, the Upanishadic teaching. This teaching that says Tattvamasi. The Buddha never said Tattvamasi. So it's the most ancient teaching in India. It's the literature that you have to study if you really want to say, I study Vedanta. It's called Shruti. The Upanishads are called Shruti because it's what's heard. The word Shruti in Sanskrit means shrunu, to hear. Shruti. What it means is that these Upanishads really consisted of a teacher who knew this truth about the self. That's called the guru. And a student who didn't know about this thing, who's ignorant of that thing, and he sits at the feet of a guru, and the guru teaches him. And that teaching is called Upanishad. That's what it means. The student just listens. And if the student is ripe enough, pure enough, introvert enough, the very moment he hears this teaching, and the teacher looks at him and says, you are that, Samakalameva, at that very moment, with nothing to do, no activity to perform, merely by understanding those three words, you are that. The student gets up and walks off, teaching over, nothing more to be said. That's called the Upanishad. Now there's one problem with this. We've all heard that sentence, most of us. You are that. It doesn't do anything. We go about our business, I'm that, okay. And where is lunch? And I gotta fix my vehicle. I am that. So it doesn't do anything. Why is that? It has to be because we're not qualified to understand that teaching. Even what I just said was not really right. The teaching doesn't say, you have to know that you're that. Does it? People think, oh, that means I have to know that I'm that. But think about it. It says, you are that. Not that you have to know that you're that. In fact, you can't know that you're that. That doesn't know that it's that. The self doesn't know itself. There's nothing other than the self that could ever know itself. So nobody ever knew the self. You are that. You're not the knower of that. You'll never be the knower of that. Why? Because you are that. If you were a knower, you'd be different from that. We're not qualified to know this truth. So what does it mean? What does it mean to be qualified to know this truth? This self, this witnessing consciousness that I said is in each and every one of you, is the most in. It's the most in. The body, the world is out from me, and then my body is closer to me. My senses seem to be in the body. My mind seems to be even more in. My intellect seems to be even more subtle than my mind. And even more in than that is the ego, the I, that really inner me. Well, even more in than that, the most in, is that witnessing consciousness that even objectifies the ego. It's the most in. It's the most pure. Pure means what? There's no defilements in it. It has no defects. It has no wrong things in it. It's perfectly pure. Shuddha. Anta. It's most in. It's most pure. And it's the most subtle. You can't see this with your eyes. You can't feel this with your hands. You can't taste it. You can't hear it. The senses can't objectify it. It's too subtle for the senses. Nobody can see the self as an object. It's the most subtle. It's the most in. It's the most pure. That witnessing consciousness in you. In order to be able to realize this truth, the mind has to become introvert. The self is in, the mind has to go in. The mind has to become pure. What do I mean by pure? It doesn't mean that you shouldn't think bad thoughts. Then your mind is... An impure mind is a mind that's extrovert. That's all that it means. When the mind is on the world, then the world is ceaselessly changing. And that mind that's on the world is changing along with it. It's called the monkey mind. You're onto this, you're onto this, you're onto this. I like this, I don't like this, I want to get that, I'm not going to do this. This is the extrovert mind. In a million years, this mind can never know the self. That witness in you is so far away, so unknowable, so ungraspable, as long as the mind is extrovert. The moment the mind turns in, and by the way, that's what I mean by a pure mind. When the mind is on the self, that unchanging witness, it becomes ekagrita, one-pointed. It's not jumping around from this to that. That inward turn, then the mind is called introvert, antarmukhi, looking inside. We have to find... Even though the self is like space, it's everywhere. There's no place. The self is over there. The self is in the sky. The self is everywhere. But if you want to realize it, you have to realize it in your own self. That's the place to realize it. As long as you're looking out, you won't realize it. So the mind has to become introvert, pure, and extremely subtle, just like the self, which is the most in, the most pure, the most subtle. That type of mind that is introvert, pure, and subtle, when the teacher says to that student who's developed a mind like that, Tattvamasi, you are that. You are that witness. At the very moment of hearing that teaching, when doing nothing, he realizes, aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman. I am not this sukhi-dukhi samsari. I am not this body that was born, is getting old, is getting sick, and is going to die. I have no pain, I have no fear, I have no desires. I have no limitations. I am eternally free. That type of mind, that introvert mind, that turning of the mind away from the world and towards the self, is the spiritual journey. That's the journey we have to take. It's not a journey to the Himalayas. You don't have to go. You don't have to go to any holy place. There's no holier place than inside you. If you go to a cave in the Himalayas, you'll be there with the same mind, believe me. I've tried it. It doesn't do much. This is the spiritualizing of the mind. This is what spiritual life is about. I'll speak about this at length, but I'm just... This inward turn of the mind is what's required. That's called sadhana. That's the spiritual sadhana that's required of us. To turn away from the objects of desire. The things that we're running after thinking that that'll make me happy. That'll make me happy. This is not going to make me happy. I'm going to avoid that. And we're running after what we like and we're trying to avoid what we dislike. It's natural for everybody. But we never really get what we like, which is unending happiness. And we never really can avoid what we don't like, which is pain, suffering, and fear. You can't avoid it. As long as you're this, you must suffer. As long as you're this, you will be looking for happiness outside, unable to find it. So this is called sadhana. And the one text that teaches the sadhana of Vedanta is called the Bhagavad Gita, this book. This is the handbook. Anyone ever hear of the Boy Scouts? I know in America it's big, it may be Germany probably. So they have a handbook, they give it out to you, and it tells you all the things to be a good Boy Scout, how to tie knots, how to row a canoe, and it's the handbook. This is the handbook, the practical life. Sitting at the feet of a guru and hearing this teaching and then walking away with nothing is because we haven't prepared ourselves. We haven't made ourselves fit enough. We're not adhikaris. In Sanskrit, it's a big word, adhikari. That this teaching is not for every Tom, Dick, and Harry. You can't just walk off the street here, hear Tattvamasi, and walk out and whistle away. It'll be of no value. So what's required is a course of discipline that will take your mind and purify it and turn it towards that ultimate reality. Let me say one other thing about this. Everybody here, I said, and I'm encouraging anyone, if I say anything that is against your experience, just raise your hand so I'll know that I'm confusing somebody. Everybody here thinks, I am this. I'm sitting on a chair. I live in wherever I live, and this is who I am. I am this, and this is my country, my politics, my president, my wife, my money, especially my money and my wife, sometimes my children. So this is the my and the I. That's in Vedanta called ignorance. In Sanskrit, the word is avidya. We're here at Yoga Vidya. Yoga Vidya, the knowledge of yoga. Vidya means knowledge. When there's no knowledge, in Sanskrit, that's called a. Avidya. Absence of knowledge about your true self is called avidya. I am the witness. But I take myself to be the witnessed. I am the knower, but I take myself to be the known. I am the experiencer, but I take myself to be the experienced. I am the subject, and I take myself to be the object. This mixing up of the self and the not-self, the subject and the object, the knower and the known, is called avidya. I am the witness always, even when I say I am fat, I am thin. The witness is not fat or thin. When I say I am happy or sad, the witness is not happy or sad. All of the objects that I superimpose on myself out of my ignorance, is the cause of my suffering. Because I don't know that I am infinite bliss, that I am everything that I've been seeking, freedom, happiness, immortality. That's my eternal nature. But because of ignorance, I am this and this is mine. I've mixed up myself with the not-self. And I've mixed up the not-self with the self. That self is pure consciousness. And that's the only consciousness that there is. Look at the dream. The whole dream appears in my consciousness. In the dream, how many consciousnesses are there? There's only one consciousness there lighting up the whole dream. In the dream, there's a lot of people, yeah? And they all look conscious. You're talking to your friend. You see your friend, I'm conscious in the dream. And my friend's looking at me, he's conscious. And the tiger is looking at both of us. He's definitely conscious. But as soon as I wake up, I see all of those people in the dream. They had no consciousness. I was the only consciousness there. There's just one consciousness. I've taken that consciousness and I've superimposed it on this body. And I'm sure that this body is conscious. It's a conscious body. Even though it's just chemicals, it takes, you don't have to be a scientist. If I cut off this finger and I throw it over there, this is me. Don't touch me. If anyone touches this finger, they're going to be touching me. And I don't want anyone touching me. Please. I don't know who you are. Don't touch me. If I cut off this finger and I throw it over there, that's not me. You can touch that. If, when it's here, it's me. When it's there, it's not me. It's the same finger. But I'm so identified. The identification with this body is so thick that to say I am not this body is almost meaningless. The body is me because it's conscious and I'm conscious. So the body is conscious. Not only that, how about my senses? Are my eyes conscious? I can see you. I can hear you. The senses are conscious. They seem conscious. And certainly my mind. My mind is conscious. It's the conscious mind. My thoughts are conscious. I am happy. That's a thought. Is it conscious? I am sad. I'm going downstairs. Whatever thought. Are those thoughts conscious? We think they are. The conscious mind. Or are they objects to the witness? And really, I've just superimposed on something that has no consciousness the fact that... And how about the ego? This ahamkara, this I have a mind. I'm the conscious being. I see. I hear. I feel. I know. This ahamkara, the ego, must be conscious. Or is it just an object in consciousness? And we've superimposed myself, that consciousness, onto the ego. I've mixed up myself, which is pure consciousness, and I've superimposed it on the not-self, the ego, the body, the mind, the senses. And in the reverse order, all of the qualities of the body I've superimposed on the self. There's a mutual superimposition of the subject and the object. The qualities of the self are superimposed on the not-self, and the qualities of the not-self are superimposed on the self. This is called anyonya adhyasa, a mutual superimposition of two separate things. It's kind of like a rope and a snake. If in a dark alley, somebody said, don't go down that alleyway, we heard there are snakes there, and you're walking down and it turns out there's a rope there, but it's dark, And you go, oh, it's a snake. Okay. So now we have a snake. But it's really a rope. But you mistook it as a snake. So you say, the snake exists. Where does that existence come from? What's really existing there? It's the rope. You've taken the existence of the rope and you superimposed it on an illusion called the snake. And the qualities of the snake, of being poisonous and being scary, that has all been superimposed on the rope. There's a mutual superimposition of the two things. And until I discriminate, oh, the snake, it's just an illusion. Ah, the rope is the reality. Ah, this body, mind, senses, and universe is just an illusion. And the only reality is the self. Until I've understood that truth, we are all, in our ignorance, mixing up myself with this body, mind, and senses. I, the witness, am this, the witnessed. Once I do this, once I make this mistake, once I'm under the influence of this misconception, it's just a misconception. It's not really, when you mistake a rope for a snake, the rope doesn't become a snake. The rope is always a rope, whether you think it's a snake or not. But until you know it's a rope, that snake is going to scare the hell out of you. And until you know that you're not this body, you're going to be afraid about your death. You're going to be feeling that you have all sorts of defects. Every one of us is filled with defects. Jealousy. Fear, anger, desire. We're filled with it. These are called defects. It's human. Nobody's blaming anybody. It's absolutely natural for everybody to feel like this. But this is the misconception that if you examine your own experience, you'll see, I did mix up the subject and the object. This is not something that some guy told me. This is my experience. You have to make it yours. It has to be clear to you. Kind of like when you look on the palm of your hand and you see a berry. How clear that is, that berry. That's how clear it is to you that you've made a mistake. I've taken myself to be the not-self. I've taken the witness to be the witnessed. I've taken the knower to be the known. I've taken the subject to be the object. This mixing up of the self and the not-self is called avidya, ignorance. And it's the cause of all of our suffering. It's the cause of samsara. There's no other cause except this misconception. And the whole purpose of Vedanta, the whole purpose of this teaching, is to remove that misconception. Once it's removed, there's nothing more to be done. You realize, I am the Devi. I am Sita Devi. I am that divine being. So the Bhagavad Gita teaches us how to introvert our minds and realize this truth. Let me say one more thing about this. We're all in ignorance, especially me, the speaker, right here now. If I wasn't in ignorance, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you people. I can assure you that. I'm as ignorant as everyone else here. I am not enlightened, I'm not a guru, I'm just like everyone else here. And my experience is not different than yours. So anything that I say, you'll only have to be able to take it, not on the authority that I know something that you guys don't, but that my experience is the same as yours. And so that if what I'm saying has any validity. The only way to know it is if you check your own experience and see, is it really the case? Is it really true what this guy is talking about? Let me say one more thing. You remember that I was talking about the cups? When the space is limited by the cup, it becomes little space. Yeah? Now, compared to that little space, how much bigger is the infinite space? It's pretty big. There's no comparison. This is limited, that's infinite. Even though the space is never limited, space is always indivisible. But because I've associated it with the cup, it seems as though the space is little. In my ignorance, I've taken myself to be this. Myself is this. And in relation to this, that witness is called God. That witness is Vishnu, the Supreme Being. That is God, and I am a jiva. Jiva means a limited living being. Because I've taken myself to be the body, I'm a living being. If I had no body, mind, or senses, I wouldn't be a jiva. But everyone feels that I have a body, mind, and senses. I am a living being. I was born, I'm getting old, I'm getting sick, and I'm going to die. That's called the jiva. And in relation to this limited jiva, that I don't know, because as long as I take myself to be a jiva, I don't know the Supreme Being. But that Supreme Being, as long as I take myself to be the cup space, I don't know the infinite space. That infinite space is God in relation to the cup space. That witnessing consciousness is God. Why is it called God? That witness, there's nothing that appears that doesn't appear to the witness. Everything that's known is known by the witness. That means the witness is all-knowing, omniscient. He knows everything. He's the witness of everyone's minds. So whatever any mind knows, he's the knower of that. He's the knower of everything. He's called Sarvajna, the all-knower. That witness is Vishnu. He pervades everything. It's called omnipresent. Omniscient, omnipresent. Look at the dream, that whole dream universe. What's upholding it? What allows it to exist? What supports the whole thing? My awareness. I am all-powerful, Sarva-Shakti. It's called omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent. Sound like God? As long as I'm an individual, the self is known as God. But that God who's the witnessing consciousness is me. He's my own self. But in my ignorance, when I take myself to be this, then I'm a jiva, and my true self is called Paramatma. I'm Atma, I'm an individual self, a jiva, and the witness is called Paramatma, the Supreme Self. And we have to turn and towards the Supreme Self, that self that exists in all beings. So the Gita, when Krishna says, turn to me, Arjuna, come to me, think about me, have your mind on me, Become my bhakta. Become my bhakti. He's only, when he says the word me in the Gita, you immediately have to think of I. In the Gita, me means I, the real I. Who's Krishna? Is he a guy, a blue guy with a flute? I'm going to tell you who Krishna is right now. I'm going to end this class. I'm going to recite the two first verses of the 13th chapter. Very beautiful one. So, idam shariram kaunteya shetramiti abhidiyate etatyo veti tam prahu shetranya tadvidaha. That's the first shloka. The next shloka says, shetranya chapi mam vidhi sarva kshetreshu bharata shetra shetranyor jnanam etat jnanam matam mama. In English, hey Arjuna, this body is like a field, kshetra. And he who knows the field, he who knows the field, the kshetra, this body is a kshetra. And he who knows it is called the knower of the field, the kshetrajna, the knower of the field. Hey Arjuna, this body is like a field, and he who knows it is called the knower of the field. That's the witness, by the way. Tadvidahu, for those people who know it. That's a little trick at the end of that shloka. For those who know it. We don't know it. Only the wise people know this. That there's a witness for this body. So that's the first verse of the 13th chapter. Hey Arjuna, this body is a field, and that knower of the field, and let me just continue, it's not only this body, we're going to see in the chapter, this body, the mind, the senses, the intellect, the ego, all of it is kshetra. It's all field. And you're the kshetrajna, he who knows it. That which knows the ego, the intellect, the senses, the mind, the body, he who knows that is called the knower of the field, the witness. And the next verse says this, kshetrajna cha pi mam vidhi. That kshetrajna, that witness in you, mam vidhi, know that to be me. The witness in you is Krishna. That's the Krishna. He's not somewhere up in heaven watching us. He's the witness in you is Krishna. That's the Vishnu, the true pervader of everything, that all-pervading consciousness. That's Krishna. That's what Krishna says. Kshetrajna cha pi mam vidhi. Know me to be the kshetrajna. Sarva kshetreshu, in all the bodies, in every kshetra, I am the kshetrajna. I am the witness in all of us. I'm that same Atma in all the beings, Arjuna. That's Krishna. The word Krishna itself is a very beautiful word. It has many meanings, but one of them means Krish. Krish means the universe. It actually means the earth, but it means the universe, everything. And Na, that which is not of the universe, is Krishna. That's the real meaning of Krishna. That which has never come down, Achyuta. He's Krishna. Is that witnessing consciousness that is unattached, unaffected, ever the same, beyond time and space, infinite bliss, pure consciousness, that kshetrajna, the knower of the field in you, is him. That's the Krishna of the Gita. It's not a theological belief. It's not a mystical experience. It's ever present. The Upanishad says, priti bodha viditam matam. It is known with every thought. With every thought that Krishna is there lighting it up. You can't think Krishna away because he's your own self. Kshatrajna cha pi mam vidhi. Know me to be the witness in all of the bodies. And then the next line says, Kshetra Kshetranyor Jnanam. This knowledge, Jnanam, of what is the Kshetra, the body, and who's the Kshetranya, the witness. Kshetra Kshetranyor Jnanam, that knowledge, I consider to be the knowledge. There's no other knowledge than this. What is the self? What is the not-self? Who is the witness? And who is the witness? That's the knowledge we have to get. This is the Bhagavad Gita. That God is the witness in every being. You can experience Him directly as your own self. Right here, right now. That's Paramatma. That's your true self. That's the God, as long as you take yourself to be a jiva. 9 o'clock, we'll end it with a mantra. This Purnamada. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om. So we meet at what time?
2:30.
2:30?